Okay, hey everyone, and welcome to an Unlimited Hangout video. Today we are going to be talking about Facebook no longer being Facebook, now being Meta, and all the buzz around that. But if you've actually been paying attention before Facebook's big buzz name change, the term Metaverse in terms of its use in news headlines and coverage, in not just in English, I also noticed it in Spanish too, has really exploded in the past couple months. And it's sort of also gone alongside the explosion in interest and, I guess, cost of NFTs, non-fungible tokens, which of course are sort of, you know, digital assets that only really exist in what the metaverse is. So we're going to be talking a little bit today about what the metaverse is, what Facebook really is, and thus what Facebook's metaverse is, since this whole name change is about putting Facebook at the forefront of creating this metaverse and developing it, and therefore profiting from it. Joining me today to discuss this is my friend Ryan Christian of The Last American Vagabond. Hey, Ryan, how's it
going?
Glad
to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a decent amount of things to get into today, but this video shouldn't be overly long. But we're going to be deconstructing some of the propaganda around this, because it obviously comes with a big sales pitch. Why do you want to live in Zuckerberg's virtual world and all of the stuff? They're certainly trying to sell it to you, and it definitely seems like it's geared towards the younger generations and things like that. But to begin, well, I guess there's a couple different ways we could begin. First, Ryan, did you have any particular reactions to Facebook's name change? Because Facebook has been in the news a lot lately over the past month, no?
Yeah, well, it's interesting that it happens because we've watched this develop, and I think maybe it was one of our discussions where we talked about how Facebook seems to be possibly the one kind of being thrown under the bus. You know, they've been the one kind of lagging on the younger generations for a while now, so it would make sense that if that is what's happening, that they would be the one kicked aside as if, as always, the problem, and then it's all good. Now we can sprint into the technocratic future with these social media controls, you know. But I think the Meta thing, I only just saw that just the other day. I've been following that story. And it just it struck me as humorous. Meta, I mean, Meta Universe. I mean, it's like we're like in a comic book, you know. It's like they're using these terms that people will associate with almost from a. It doesn't seem to represent what that it looks like to me, which is just another way to rush people into this kind of manipulated world where, like your point about the NFTs, we're seeing that in a lot of different ways. Where I even made the point about the overly political push for the conversation of transgender, which I see as sort of like an opening the door to the concept of transhumanism. Not that that's not a real topic, but they're using these things to normalize the way this is going, you know. And that's what this feels like to me as your discussions have your interview with forgetting his name right now, you just mentioned George, I believe.
George Gammon.
Mm-hmm. You were just talking about.
Okay, well, to start off, there's this interesting article that came. Obviously, there's a lot of hot takes about Facebook's metaverse rebranding. Though it is worth mentioning that this rebrand, Facebook actually really started this in August. It's only the whole name change timed for this week that's given it a lot more buzz. Some people have argued it's a distract from the whole Facebook whistleblower agenda. But I think, as we've talked about, the Facebook whistleblower really wasn't so much what they're framing it as in terms of problems for Facebook, more like part of a Facebook aligned push to end online anonymity. But what's interesting, right, is that push to end online anonymity, which I read about for T-Lab earlier this year, the partnership against cybercrime, that's basically preceding this effort to create the metaverse. So we can assume, right, that entry into the metaverse is also predicated on the elimination of online anonymity. This push to, as we've seen recently promoted just in the past couple of days in the UK and France, tying your ID or a digital biometric ID to your internet access, that's also going to be, a precursor to the mainstreaming of the metaverse. Worth keeping that in mind here. So yeah. I want to share this article from Scientific American that I find hugely disturbing. Hopefully we get, there we go. So this is from the 27th. So just a couple days ago. Should big tech's plan for a metaverse scare us? Tech companies seek to create far more immersive digital environments, possibly mediated by brain implants, which of course you and I on T-Lab over the past year and a half really have been talking about brain machine interfaces, brain computer interfaces, and this stuff, how it's not conspiracy theory. And now it's being openly talked about in publications like Scientific American. So what's interesting here is it talks about, of course, it's reason this article was written allegedly is about what does the metaverse mean, because it's being talked about by Zuckerberg, how it's basically the Matrix, which yes, it is, and it is much more closer to the dystopian vision the Matrix puts forth than the gee whiz, this is going to make hanging out with your friends so cool spin that Zuckerberg has put on it that we'll take a look at in a moment. So apparently the term metaverse comes from this 1992 novel, but it's worth mentioning as they do here, and there's a little bit on this in the next tab. Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella has also been talking about the metaverse as well. So this isn't exclusive to Zuckerberg. This is something that all the big tech companies are really on board with. And that also includes Google. So, I mean, you have like Google, Microsoft, and Facebook, presumably Apple as well. Amazon will probably get into it at some point because they're already developing wearables, right? So this is something that like big tech is essentially going to be in lockstep in. So according to the Microsoft CEO, he defined the metaverse in last May, so I guess it's May 2020, as made up of digital twins, simulated environments, and mixed reality. But what's interesting about his quote there is that he says, as the virtual and physical worlds converge, the metaverse, you know, is these things, and it's emerging as a first-class platform. And where have we heard this about the virtual and physical worlds converging, Ryan?
Right, exactly.
Right.
Fourth Industrial Revolution. I'm sure you could just see that just explode my head as like, that's the thing. You know, I can't not talk about that crossover because of everything going on. This is its own topic that should be alarming in and of itself. But that, you know, digital the passports we're seeing, and that's obviously where this is all converging. They're creating this infrastructure, and I keep screaming about how the natural immunity kind of, which we see that sidestep beginning to happen, where they go, oh, we won, we can use natural immunity for the passports. It feels like the passport was always the real focal point. I think there's more nefarious stuff happening in these injections, but these things converge in obvious ways, and it's no digital crossover. Go ahead. It's just very alarming to me.
No, I agree with you. I've been saying this on some recent interviews too, that I think the primary purpose of the vaccination campaign is the implementation of the passports, adverse health effects, potential depopulation plan, whatever, all of that stuff. I think if that turns out to be the case at some point, that's a secondary objective because they are building sort of this anti-human post-human future. So obviously it benefits to have less of us, but it seems like getting us hooked in this digital fourth industrial revolution grid, the foundation of it anyway, seems to be the primary purpose here of the mandates and things like that.
And what's interesting.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Just on the brain shit part of it. I mean, that's we really need to stand back as a society, especially those that are discounting anything they're told to as conspiracy theory, and watch and recognize how obvious this has been a planned direction. Klaus Schwab's discussions that you can look back a decade ago, right up until 2019, when suddenly these stopped really being stated, is that yes, the fourth industrial revolution will be about you, changing you as a person. Gene editing will change you. Like he's saying all these things and saying about the fourth industrial revolution, and now he's saying that that's what this is. So let's put one and two together here, and realize that this is exactly what they've said. If you mention brain chips or anything like that on Twitter right now, you will be screamed as a conspiracy theorist till forever. And yet here they are going, that's what we're going to be doing.
This is Scientific American talking about it here in a second. Yeah.
And I love how they always do these articles like, should we be scared of this thing? I bet the bottom says no. That's before the conclusion.
Well, the conclusion is quite stunning, personally, in this article. We'll get to that in a second. But one thing I do want to say about like vaccine mandates really quickly, I sort of responded to a tweet from Michael Krieger of Liberty Blitzkrieg on Twitter about this, because he was talking about vaccine mandates and how it's you're surrendering bodily autonomy. in that situation. And I was like, well, it's surrendering bodily autonomy today. The next, you know, in the future, the push will be surrender your body essentially and go live in Zuckerberg's metaverse. I mean, of course, as I just mentioned, it's not just Zuckerberg's, right? But the metaverse that Zuckerberg is positioning himself in, you know, at the forefront of today.
Can I add one more thought to that, that I just think is really relevant to, and I know this is quite a hop, skip and a jump way too far into the conspiracy theory future that a lot of normies probably won't want to hear, but, right. But, you know, think about things like I've talked about the Mew chip that was, it's been around since 2010, which is like the 10th of the size of a grain of salt that is dust. You could blow it in the air and it can use your body's motion and heat and energy to work for itself. It doesn't need a power source. Your body is the power source. Like, let's see that Matrix crossover, like the weirdness there. And then ask yourselves, if we do find ourselves in this future where all these people, arguably a good portion of society, are just strapped in, you know, living their lives in this, like the Sims were already kind of leading people to do. And then they go, well, hey, like, let's utilize that energy, right? Like, you're just sitting there all day, like, let that energy run something around your house or blah, blah, blah. It seems like a very obvious step that could be taken. And I just want us to see that this stuff is not that crazy. Like, what the whole comparison to the Matrix, and people used to act like that's such old, the conspiracy theorists. It's a logical step in the direction they're trying to build. With the, if the Mew chip has been doing that from 2010, why would they be thinking like that, right? They're using our body's energy already for in a lot of different ways. So just want to throw that out there.
Well, I don't have this queued up, but there actually have been a lot of advances specifically about your body heat powering wearable technology, different things that they've, you know, developed that go on the skin that generate electricity from your body heat, among other things, patents that have been produced to, you know, generate the Microsoft one that generates, you know, money essentially from your body heat and movement and brain waves potentially. Very interesting, considering that Microsoft also, like Facebook, is also making a metaverse pivot. We're all surprised.
That's a MKM4 crossover we're living right now, right? It's like jamming those two books together. That's where we're going.
Oh, fun. Anyway, what's interesting that comes up in this article is that it talks about some criticisms of the metaverse. This one is from Jessa Crispin in The Guardian. The Scientific American describes it as a fiery critique. And what she apparently says is, you know, she calls the metaverse an escapist fantasy of tech billionaires trying to leave the world to evade responsibility for that their malevolent influence on it. And she combines that with like Blue Origin of Jeff Bezos and stuff. He's going into space. Look, this isn't about Jeff Bezos and Mark Zuckerberg escaping. Right. This is about you being forced into this reality. So this is I think this is sort of the controlled opposition, limited hangout narrative. For challenging the metaverse is going to be much like what Crispin puts here. Oh, the billionaires are trying to escape from what they've made. But no, it's not about, I honestly personally doubt that Jeff Bezos and Mark Zuckerberg personally will be utilizing the metaverse to the extent that they're predicting for the mainstream. Within 5 to 10 years, as they're saying now.
I kind of see it as like a step one of that actually ultimately being the goal, right? Like we've talked about, like using this situation and forcing people into it to better learn how to make what they want to make them. So, you know, putting their consciousness into something and living forever is obviously that kind of technocratic dream, but they can't do that until they get this worked out just right. And they're going to test on us like they always do, like they're doing with the injections.
Well, I think also there's a potential for what you mentioned with the whole battery thing, the potential to have this jive with the climate change narrative coming from these groups. What better way for you not to spend, you know, energy and reduce your carbon footprint by not moving at all and living in this virtual reality where the wearables that allow you to enter that reality are powered by your own body heat. Ooh, it's net zero, Ryan.
Right. How much you want to bet Bill Gates is going to come up with some intravenous sustenance that they, hey, guess what? Now you can just lay there and plug in.
Soylent Green type stuff. Well, that's also in the Matrix as well. It seems like that movie gave them a lot of ideas that they later chose to make reality. Well, more aptly probably that because of how far back this goes when you look into it. So what's important right now in terms of Facebook and the metaverse is that a lot of the way they're first developing it and first trying to get people hooked into it is through the Oculus Rift and Oculus VR system, which Facebook acquired for like $2 billion in 2014. That company is from was created by Palmer Luckey, who I will talk about in a second, talking about what Facebook really is, because, you know, I wrote this article and I'll go into it a little bit more in a second, called the Military Origins of Facebook, I think in April of this year. And that also involves, you know, Palantir, Peter Thiel, to an extent, DARPA, all of those things. And Palmer Luckey, after leaving Facebook, has created an autonomous drone weapon startup, basically, for the U.S. military that's backed by Peter Thiel.
Standing.
And he's all about the metaverse and virtual reality and all of this stuff. But he, you know, is very happy to have his VR technology and you know, AI technology militarized by the U.S. Government. So anyway, here they talk about, you know, today it's Oculus, but they're also exploring brain machine interfaces that go far beyond VR goggles. These interfaces could further blur the line between us and our devices. I talked about this before.
Did that say attached to the skull? Did I miss that part that you just had? Did it say attached to the skull?
Yeah. Oh, this is a separate part I didn't read yet. But some brain machine interfaces, detect neural signals via external electrodes or optical sensors attached to the skull or other parts of the body, right? And then they're talking about non-invasive devices. Well, Facebook, for years, this is from 2017, has been at the forefront of the non-invasive brain machine interface, market.
The non-invasive is the Perfuse is considered non-invasive, despite that going inside your arm.
Yeah, but this one doesn't. It's basically like a bracelet. But you guys might remember this lady, Regina Dugan, who's now in charge of Welcome Leap, that I wrote about earlier this year as well. She is the former director of DARPA, the U.S. military's DARPA, and then went on to create DARPA equivalents for Google and then for Facebook. Facebook's being called Building 8. And while at Facebook, led the development of this sci-fi plan for typing with your mind and hearing with your skin. You know, this is back several years ago. This has been an ambitious plan. For some time, but here it is, building a new kind of non-invasive brain machine interface, a cap or a headband. They announced it. They showed a pilot of it in, I believe, the beginning of 2020. It's essentially a wrist-worn thing that purports to be able to read your thoughts. So it will type your thoughts without you having to move your fingers at all on a keyboard. And things like that. Yeah. And that was their ambition then too. Lets people text simply by thinking, and armband, all of this stuff. So this non-invasive brain machine interface, was thought up by someone like Regina Dugan. And currently Regina Dugan is running a DARPA for the Wellcome Trust, who I've written about a couple of times over the past year and their ties to eugenics going back several decades, among other things. But Welcome Leap is expressly targeting children with these non-invasive brain machine interfaces over the next 5 to 10 years. And we can get into this later if you want. I think the real targets of the metaverse for mainstreaming it are going to be young people and little kids, not so much older people, you know, sort of in our age group, Ryan. It's definitely going to be much lower down in my opinion.
Curious why that is, why the focus on children in that regard. I get the other things, but like maybe it's the brain is easier to map and manipulate.
Well, I think, you know, I think of this, that really famous Joseph Stalin quote where he's like, you know, you give me the education, you give me kids at like age 7 and I'll have them believe whatever. I'm paraphrasing, you know, but I can, you can make them believe whatever you want type of thing. They're easier to acclimate to this type of stuff and normalize it with them than say someone who's actually lived in the real world for decades. It's much harder, you know, after the fact. You know, in their 30s and 40s to force them into the virtual world than someone who's under the age of 10, for example, who's very drawn to video games and screens as kids are, right? So, anyway, this is the concluding paragraph of the Scientific American piece. I think it's very revealing. It says, I have a hard time ruling out the possibility that an unholy alliance of big tech and the military will foist an implanted enabled metaverse on us. Okay. After all, well, think about this. The National Security Commission on AI, Silicon Valley military intelligence community planning out this type of stuff. I'm pretty sure Facebook participated in that. I know Eric Schmidt did, who's former Google. He was the head of that. Anyway, it says, after all, as the real world gets scarier, the metaverse might become more and more appealing. In our frightening future, the metaverse, not religion, might serve as the opiate of the masses.
So that's incredible. I mean, so I, that's not, that? What I, not what I expected at all. I mean,
I know,
but it's weird how it's almost like this is bad, but it might be kind of good, but it's bad, right? Like, it's like they're, you know, because in the middle there, it kind of seems like it's like, well, as the world gets scarier, this might be more appealing. So what do you, the end goal feels like they're trying to act like they're against this. Maybe they really are, because I think that statement is hard to pull back. An unholy alliance of tech and military. Well, yeah. Isn't that exactly what we're all screaming about?
But it's
right
been
now?
Happening.
Exactly.
Facebook is tech, is like the military. It is like a DARPA thing.
I just find that one sentence to be the most like, that is what you are literally saying and being censored for, right? That they're trying to foist this, they're trying to push this new future on us, and they're doing it under a guise of this and that. It's just so funny how, you know, but of course, I think this article is actually trying to make it seem like they're sort of like, maybe it'll be bad, but they're selling people on why this is a cool new future. Is that what
they're
you
saying? Should it scare us? Well, it would be scary, I guess, if big tech and the military forced us all to get brain implants and live in a virtual world. But you know what? By that point, the real world might be even scarier. That's pretty much what this is saying. And we know, obviously, that since COVID-19, you know, that ratcheted fear up and, the world's horrible. Oh, I'm so scared all the time, you know, to like 11. And then we have the climate change scaremongering coming, energy crisis, supply chain crisis. Oh, but look, the metaverse is a world of plenty. you can have all of the stuff you want virtually in the metaverse. Why we pump a slop into you that was designed in a Gates funded lab, you know, but you'll be tasting steak. And I mean, it's so, you know, that's sort of, but you can see the developing sales pitch here. I think they're hinting at it. The more dystopian they make things, and it'll be under, oh, the planet is dying, all of this stuff. You know, look how much better the metaverse is. And eventually, I think that'll segue into, you're a better citizen if you choose to live in the metaverse because you're not hurting the planet by expending energy and, you know, moving.
False part of that sales pitch is ultimately that they're suggesting that we are the problem, right? Which is always the case. Your human gross body is causing all the problems. And so it's not that we're not, by putting everybody in these machines that we're, you know, theorizing or coming, whatever, that leaves the World Economic Forum groups that are owning everything. And you've never, you know, you have no privacy, you've never been happier. They're still at the top. They're the ones causing these problems. So they're going to shove you all in these machines and then ultimately still be there causing those problems. So the threat is still there. You see what I mean? Like, it's such a false idea that moving us out of this will keep you safe because it's still all there.
Well, they're taking ownership of nature, right? With these natural asset corporations and things like that. Like, they're taking over the physical world in a way they've never done it before. They're going to own everything. You're only allowed to own things like NFTs and things in the metaverse. So they're going to own the real, actual physical world. But you can own a little slice of the pie in the metaverse with your NFT clothes and whatever, because I mean, this was several months ago, I think in August or July, Bloomberg started having all this stuff about NFTs or the new craze in fashion, NFT sneakers and all of this stuff. Well, why would you buy that stuff? Oh, well, it's obviously to use it in the metaverse. I really feel like more and more every day that the whole NFT craze has been manufactured to sort of create hype for this, because who really is spending like millions of dollars on like virtual sneakers you can never wear and stuff like that, you know? It's to create manufacture interest in a craze that benefits these people. I don't really think it's organic.
I agree. I think that you think the things, the content like Ready Player One is meant to coax you into this new cool gamified future, you know, where that's the real world and you just have to suffer through the other part of it, if that's even still happening. That's, you know, that's what that whole movie's all about. All, you know, buying your new little things and improving your, you know, obviously the fight back at the end. Yay, we won. We beat the bad guys. You know, it's except that's still there. And that's still your technocratic future. You know, that's what that feels like to me. And I think you're right. Like that point, there's a lot more than just the NFTs, but that's a lot of those things are happening where they're beginning to kind of open the door to those things, even though we haven't really wrapped our mind around why those things make sense. I mean, ask yourself why, like you said, what's the point of owning something that you can't even use until you have a world that you can use them in? It seems like a no-brainer.
Yeah, I think it's about creating, trying to manufacture interest in the whole metaverse thing, and now it's being promoted and what have you. So here are some metaverse definitions offered by this article. Here you have what I mentioned earlier, the Microsoft guy talking about the Microsoft's Azure offerings are now being described as a metaverse. So I guess Facebook's going to have its own metaverse, and Microsoft is going to have theirs. Yeah.
Exactly the same term.
And that was in May of earlier this year. Well, here they tell you, metaverse definition. Zuckerberg is asked about the metaverse. He says the metaverse is a vision that spans many companies, the whole industry.
Oh my God, that's ridiculous. I mean, this is insulting to our intelligence. I mean, they're all working together to build this, just like they're working together to push what's happening with the passport.
Yeah. Because think about Silicon Valley. You look at something like the National Security Commission on AI, and also the origins of a lot of these Silicon Valley companies, deep ties to the national security state. A lot of them funded and created with NQTEL funding or having CIA origins of another type in the case of Oracle or Salesforce and their origin story. And then you have Facebook's particular case with DARPA. Peter Thiel, when he's trying to recreate total information awareness, Google with CIA's NQTEL, you know, there really isn't. And in recent years, you know, all those companies have essentially become also government and intelligence contractors. The line between them is not clearly defined and arguably doesn't exist. Right. So, you know, you have Silicon Valley as an arm of the national security state building this metaverse, while at the same time, DARPA has invested a lot of money and time in developing the infrastructure for this as well, like brain-machine interfaces, among other things that they've invested a lot of time and money in. So it doesn't just span the big tech industry. It's there's interest in this, I think, in other parts of the United States power structure that's supposed to be overseeing Silicon Valley and regulating them. So that's pretty interesting. Anyway, Zuckerberg goes on to say, you can think about it, the metaverse, as the successor to the mobile internet. So this is the next phase of the internet. They're going to gut online anonymity, as we've talked about. Mm-hmm. Online, and this is going to be what the internet becomes after they centralize control of it, and they're going to guide it into this. That's what they mean.
What gives them the right to make these choices?
They right? have a monopoly, though.
So power.
Yeah, and it's not just a monopoly over these tech services; it's also a monopoly of human attention.
Yeah, good point.
Right, which is an important point. So it's certainly not something, the metaverse is something, it's not something that any one company is going to build, but I think a big part of our next chapter is going to be to hopefully be contributing to building that in partnership with a lot of other companies, creators, and developers. So, you know, they're starting to like really beef this out and build this up now, while at the same time, the same people that back a lot of these entities are going to make the world much scarier. And it's going to be obviously the media that does a lot of scaring. But keep in mind, too, in the case of Facebook and these Silicon Valley companies, forgot to mention this a second ago, just look at the amount of Silicon Valley executives that run the DNC right now, which is the Democrats are in power. Right. So, I mean, the amount of Facebook executives, Twitter executives, Google executives, it's substantial. So these are people that are essentially driving policy of the ruling party in the United States.
Yeah, no biggie. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Ask yourself why they're doing any of this in the middle of a pandemic, right? We're going to reimagine everything you've ever thought of in the middle of while we're struggling with pandemics and we're overwhelmed and we can't do that. But yeah, we're going to do all this meanwhile. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, I learned this recently from Ian Davis of In This Together, who I had on my podcast. The World Economic Forum's Great Reset, they actually began it in 2010 and they called it the Global Redesign Process. And that's when they made all their global agenda councils yes. that developed all these policy papers that are now being driven forward through the Great Reset. But that's a very telling name, the Global Redesign Process.
It just shows how they circle back and keep doing the same things until they work, right? I mean, that happens constantly.
Well, it seems to be working now, and it seems like a pandemic was, they realized, was their best bet to get most people to go along to get in at least their hooks into this system. You know,
have you seen Derek's article on the parasite stress theory? Sorry, I'm making this long, but he had a great article on parasite stress theory that just basically talked about how that's exactly what they already learned. Multiple studies. This will lead people into authoritarianism, whether they want it or not. And they'll follow along.
Yeah, I mean, that was in Rockefeller's lockstep. But also, I do want to point out that back when, the former British mercenary guy who created the White Helmets, he talked about how that there was polling done about what type of group people would trust more. And it was like healthcare rescue workers out of anyone else. So I think that was obviously extrapolated to what happened, you know, last year, in my opinion. But it's interesting that, and we've talked about this before as well, where you see the biggest pushes in vaccination campaigns in the world is also, are also the countries that are having the biggest push to get into the fourth industrial revolution framework first. And that includes Chile, by the way, which we talked about yesterterday on your show, trying to be the leader of 4IR, smart cities, all of that stuff in Latin America, and also, you know, having 90% of their adults and soon to be 12 and up population vaccinated. So with the vaccine passport. So anyway, back to the metaverse to not get too ahead of it. So what's interesting here is that the main theme of the metaverse, the main sales pitch that they make about why the metaverse is better and different than the internet is feeling present. And they say it down here. The key difference is the idea of presence, that you're more present in the metaverse than you are with the internet because it's more immersive. But is that really true? I don't know. Any thoughts on that?
It doesn't seem to make sense. I mean, it's the recreating your reality, right? No, that real life over there, but you're not even really there. You know, it's like, come over here where you're present. I mean, obviously this is about a choice, right? If you're present in your real life or I think the argument is most people aren't present in their real life because they're absorbed into social media and ad revenue and everything else going on their phone and their computer. Whereas, come over here. Well, that's not happening. Oh, just until we start making that happen. Ads start popping up while you're in the metaverse. But it just doesn't make sense.
That's inevitable though. God, right, that sounds like hell.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I think that's an inverse of the reality, which is what they're doing everywhere right now.
Oh, this is so wild to me. It's not because I've been steeped in this for a while. But I mean, just the fact that they expect people to go along with this. And the sad thing is a lot of people probably will. Yeah. But, you know, we'll see.
Especially since life is pretty upsetting right now for a lot of people. Not maybe the reason, you know?
That I think that's part of why. Why would people ever go into this world otherwise if they didn't make life on Earth hell for everyone? That's essentially what their gambit is, I think. Anyway, Zuckerberg goes on to say about the metaverse, talking about presence, right? So he says that's about presence. That's clearly a part that we're very invested in because it's the technology that delivers the clearest form of presence. And he goes on to say, I think that this is a persistent synchronous environment where we can be together, which I think is probably going to resemble some kind of hybrid of social media we see today, but an environment where you're embodied in it. I think that's interesting. An environment where we can be together because of COVID, we can't be together.
Exactly.
Because of climate change, we can't travel to see each other anymore. This is the only way that you're allowed to interact with other humans. That's what this is saying, I think, tacitly.
I see a much clearer picture on that now with that rest of that paragraph. You're right. I mean, that seems like an obvious lean into the world they're at least trying to create where we're not able to see our grandmother, right? That's an obvious sidestep. That's interesting.
So I think this is going to come together with public policy for climate change and also the policies we've already seen for COVID-19 that are going to restrict movement and restrict human interaction to the greatest extent possible to make the metaverse more attractive. I think there's going to be just a lot of different policy decisions made that have an ulterior motive of making this virtual world much more attractive to people than the actual world. And that is insane.
Right. It really is.
That people are being essentially tortured in the real world to go live in a virtual world that's more profitable for the global public-private partnership that is ruling over us.
It's alarming. I mean, this is dystopian movie novel type stuff. I mean,
the
breadth of that, you know, and, you know, to make it more digestible for some of the average people that may be thinking that's why would they do that was always the question. You know, it doesn't have to be all encompassing. It's just about getting a certain group, a certain amount of the population to submit to this so they can begin the process. Right. That's really what it ultimately feels like to me.
Right. And Zuckerberg predicts that will happen in the next 5 to 10 years. What do you know? In time for 2030.
Hey, shocking.
Everyone's favorite year that they can't stop mentioning. So anyway, this is a recent thing from Tech Republic that came out yesterday. But it's interesting the timeline they mentioned, because this is also the timeline for the conclusion, for example, of Welcome Leaps projects that are aimed at getting kids essentially hooked into this from infancy. Please go back and read my report if you haven't, this one, from infancy on, essentially. And also, not just that, but as you mentioned earlier, this also is totally in combination with gene editing as well. So it's not just sort of like you're plugging your CNS, your central nervous system, into this metaverse. The idea is also to have like a gene editing component, fundamentally an effort to change the nature of the species. And people at the WEF, like you all know, a Harari make this explicit, saying in a century or two, humans as we know them today won't exist and all of this stuff.
I should just add quickly the point that, you know, there's a lot of conversation about, you know, putting microchips in the injections and, you know, they're making it crazy. And nobody with honest, I would argue, is arguing we can prove that's happening. I don't think there's any evidence to prove that there's microchips or, you know, whatever. Certainly possible. I think that's even likely. But the point is, think about the fact that they have open studies that have been going on, as you've talked about, for a decade or even longer, that's real technology. That can happen, that it's one step away from going, hey, well, now we can just put this in there with the injections we're giving when they're infants. And then, you know, why would they? That's a logical argument. You know, is why make another step? Now we can just put those in and now they're immersed in this process from infancy forward.
Well, I think the current stuff about what is in the injections right now, what are they going to do, and all of that is to sort of make people who haven't been looking at this space for a very long time just think all of those topics are completely insane. When in fact, everything that's going on right now that we can obviously see and confirm, vaccine passports, for example, is putting us on a path towards this specific future where those things are an inevitable part of walking further down that path. We're at the start of that path, right? And that's why it's so important to change course and develop parallel systems and go on a separate path away from that. But the more we allow this path to advance, all of those things will be coming, and they've signaled that. It doesn't need to be now.
Right.
It doesn't need to be now. So I think a lot of us, there's a lot of division about, we have to say exactly what's in the vaccine now and what it's going to do. And I know what it's going to do in 6 months or 2 years to people that have gotten it. I think that's a divide and conquer strategy, sort of like what happened with the 9/11 truth movement, in the sense of let's argue about the minute details of different aspects of that day and not focus on the bigger picture of how that day has been used to develop and implement policies and start wars that are impacting millions of people around the world.
Not that those small points aren't important, but I agree with you wholeheartedly that's what I think was used for, 100%.
Yeah, I don't think I'm not saying we shouldn't focus on those small points because, right. They are important. But the, you know, having that be used as a wedge to drive division in movements is problematic and has happened. And it's happening now. anyway, so this is another article I mentioned a second ago, the Tech Republic one, 5 to 10 years for the metaverse to be mainstream. Here's Zuckerberg saying, we will invest many billions for years to come before the metaverse reaches scale. And this will be mainstream in the next 5 to 10 years. Oh, you can teleport. Look at this. NFTs. They're telling you straight up what NFTs are now. Virtual after parties are one way people could experience the metaverse, said Mark Zuckerberg. These are like the same graphics as The Sims as today. So you get to go live in The Sims. Hooray. Thanks, Mark Zuckerberg, for making all of that possible. You know, prioritizing creators and paying them. That sounds so utopian. The metaverse will be built by hundreds of thousands of creators, and that will be a vital component of the metaverse. Please don't participate in this. If you were contacted by Facebook, say no. They're saying, you know, people, creators and developers should be able to make a good living doing this work. If you're a programmer, do not participate in Zuckerberg's hellscape matrix construction. Make them work for it. As we'll see in a minute here, the graphics they currently have are not good. And I don't think will be very attractive to many people, except again, maybe for young kids, like I was saying earlier, I think are the target of this. So currently Horizon is the company's current VR platform for creating content and interacting in the metaverse. It has home, worlds, and workrooms. Okay, so workrooms we're going to watch the video of here in a second. It says they'll be, we'll see how it looks and their sales pitch for it. But they say, before we get to that, that they'll be releasing a new set of controllers. Currently, they're these like weird little circles. You'll see them in a sec, that you hold in your hand. But now they'll have new exercise ones and a new headset. And you're wearing the headset, not so Facebook, which claims to be able to read your thoughts with their non-invasive wearables, can get in your brain. It will allow wearers to wipe the sweat from their brow.
That's an interesting point you made there that I hope that people don't
use your hand, losers, to wipe the sweat from your brow.
Well, I didn't even put that together until you just said that. I mean, if you can simply wear a bracelet in 2017 and that can literally read what you're thinking and type it out, why hasn't that been everything they've ever made that goes in your body since? I mean, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I just want to point out, though, that this headset doesn't make sense. Why do you need a headset to wipe sweat from your brow, to wipe virtual sweat from your brow in the VR workout? You can't just do that if you have a handheld device. That should be a red flag.
Oh, no. Well, I think, what they're meaning right there is the headset that goes on your face. And that now they're making it so it wipes your sweat, so you don't have to take it off and wipe your sweat.
Oh, yeah, because the Oculus Rift thing would get sweaty in there, and the space around your eyes would be extra sweaty. Oh, okay, that's what they mean. Yeah.
Terrible. Anyway.
A sweat-friendly Oculus Rift. All right. Well, then let's watch this video then of Horizon Workrooms. There's two. We'll start with an interview Mark Zuckerberg did before the name change 2 months ago on CBS This Morning. This is a separate video. Do you have the other one?
Yeah, the first one with Mark. Here we go. Oh.
Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah. This one?
Yeah. Okay. If you want to comment, just
Mark
pause.
Mark Zuckerberg says in 5 years, Facebook will not be the social media company as we know it. It'll be a metaverse
company.
5 years. Now, that term was invented back in 1992 in the novel Snow Crash by Neal Stephenson. It refers to a virtual universe beyond our everyday reality. We spoke to Mark Zuckerberg exclusively, that's the real Mark Zuckerberg, about the company's first big step into the metaverse.
Not the fake one.
It is being released today. And we have to say, it's pretty amazing.
Let's talk about metaverse. Because, you know, for most people, it's a term that they're not familiar with. And if they are familiar with it, they don't really know what it means. It reminds me when we first heard about the internet. What is it? WWW? What? How does that work? You know, I don't want to be a meme years from now where we're talking about metaverse. How do you see the metaverse?
So I think of the metaverse as the next generation of the internet. So you can kind of think about it as instead of being an internet that we look at. It's an internet that we are a part of, or that we can be inside of.
Think films like Ready Player One, where the idea of a metaverse went by a different name.
Except for eating, sleeping, and bathroom breaks, whatever people want to do, they do it in the Oasis.
I always wanted to help build this kind of immersive system that you could be in with your friends and feel like you were present together, but go explore, you know, other planets or other periods of time, or, you know, play games together, but feel like you were really in it together.
But I'm sure that's what he's always wanted.
In it together, too. It's just funny. That's like that's the tagline from COVID-19, too. We're all in this together, you know.
I know. Well, you hear a lot of this collectivism type language in Zuckerberg's promotions for this stuff recently. But remember, this is the guy talking about Facebook. They trust me with their data, those dumb fucks, talking right. about Facebook's users. And he's trying to be like, well, I've always just wanted to make an immersive world for people to explore things, not exactly like trap them in there and milk them in their brains for profit because they're dumb fucks who trust me.
Right. You know, well, that's I mean, even if this is a utopia, which I highly doubt, and I do not think that's where this is going, but even if it is this great thing and everyone loves it, that's still going to happen, right? We need to realize that. We just think that that's obviously the other direction. It's going to be not good, and it's also going to mine your data and use your information and sell that. But that's going to happen regardless. Every single thing we've ever done, I mean, even in regard to the vaccine passports, do we realize that's been twice now they've been caught selling that data to companies for profit? They say, no, we'll never do that. Privacy matters. And they do it every single time. So that's going to happen here, too. You know, important to think about.
Drum roll, please. We like a big announcement on CBS, and we really like it when we're the only ones that have that announcement. So what's your big announcement today?
So today we're announcing a new service called Workrooms. It's basically a virtual reality service
collaborating
together and doing work. So this is going to be one part of this overall vision that we've talked about, and it's something that we've been using internally at Facebook for a while, and we really like. But it basically gives you the opportunity to, you know, sit around a table with people and work and brainstorm and whiteboard ideas for people who can't be there through virtual reality. They can just video conference in, so you can include everyone.
Why don't you video conference anyway?
Exactly what I'm thinking right now, right? Isn't this called Zoom? Right? Wasn't it called any other video conferencing app? Like, that's not even a good sell. There's a, you know, this is just about making it fun and gamified, which aren't you at work? Like, that doesn't make sense to me, right?
Yeah. Oh, but you can use your avatar and you can have blue hair and Horizon Workrooms, and you can't on Zoom unless you dye your hair blue real life. I don't know. I mean, it clearly is lacking as the sales pitch is odd. It's odd. And he tries to like justify it a little bit. And it's very clumsy, basically, because it's really the same advantages he gives for this are the same advantages that are from remote work, period.
Right. Well, that's what it feels like, is this is a step into, well, yeah, Zoom is one thing, but now you can feel like you're really there because that's never going to come back. That's never your life again. This is your new normal. So here's how you can get a little bit of that back without saying that.
Yeah, but the graphics suck. Look at this.
Yeah, they do.
It's look
bad.
At this.
It is.
Because there's a big difference between the graphics. Like I showed the one that looks like the current iteration of The Sims. That's from the keynote, right? But their actual working metaverse is this shit right now. You want to be trapped in there with ads?
right, on the table. It feels like some cheap poker game with your names up top. You know, that's what it's like. That's what it feels like to me. I mean, I've seen poker games with better graphics than this so far.
That's so sad. Oh, man. They're investing billions. This is billions of dollars worth of, oh, man, Facebook.
Right. They spend $1 million on this, and then they spend $999 million on, you know, the background absorbing your information part of it. That's the big machine, right?
Yeah.
This is what it's all about right here. You know?
Oh, man. All right. Yeah, it gets weirder if you want to continue.
You know, you feel like you're really right there with your colleagues.
I'm up for a demonstration. Let's go.
Look how cool you look in real life.
And by the way, I've worn one of those things and they are wildly uncomfortable. They actually have things you can buy that make it like less uncomfortable. Like it's you know, neck, everything. I was like, this thing is ridiculous.
It's top heavy. You're like leaning. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I can foresee lots of neck and back stuff down the line because of that. But either way, it's just not ideal for people existing in something for extended periods of time. Just on a side note.
Reality headsets. Once inside, you can customize your own avatar. Mark, I'm in.
All right, welcome.
Oh, my God. You've got freckles on your nose.
I have freckles in real life, too, so I'm, you know, trying to do the best of my avatar.
Do you like my glasses? I like it in here.
What fun little things to hold in your hands constantly.
Yeah, and neither of them look like the one. Like, this is really the apex of the technology we're at right now. Like, we have Mew chips and in 2010, Smart Dust, and we're like, yeah, this is the best we can do with our graphics for real life. Something rings very untrue about this.
Right. And they don't even give you legs. Yeah, you're right. Only like top up. They can't even like put in legs for you. You get to dress your whole avatar, but it's only top up. I don't know. It's dumb.
Feels that way for sure.
Yeah.
Cool. Reality interview. How about
it's
you?
Mine too. First virtual reality interview too.
Isn't it good?
Excited to do this with you.
Isn't it good we can do this together? So how long have you been working on this? Were you getting all zoomed out? Because I was thinking, I was getting zoomed out. Were you getting zoomed out?
There it is. Obviously, just, well, that Zoom's bad for unspoken reasons. Aren't you tired of that? This is the new thing. That's a well sold, guys. Right? I mean,
this is so much better than Zoom.
Right. It's a game.
Is it though? Because you have to hold this dumb shit in your hands. You can't type at the same time.
Oh, that's an
excellent
point.
And you have this heavy thing on.
Think about how stupid that is. Well, I bet you there's a way you press those buttons and type, which is exponentially harder than typing as normal, but it's fun.
Yeah, no shit, because how do you type with that? And it's just so you can, like, move your hands in the virtual space, but if it's a workroom, shouldn't you be able to, like, write on a whiteboard or, like, move things around? You would think that, but no, it's just so your little avatar can go, ah!
Like, I'm sure it gives you the ability to like press the button and draw, but my point is that it's wildly more difficult than actually doing it.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's mm-hmm. like you're making your life harder to be a part of what they want you to be a part of. It's not possible.
Yes. Yes.
So
oh my
we
gosh.
Actually started working on this even before COVID. And this mm-hmm. has been
shocking.
A long-term
so partially surprising.
We've just been really optimistic about virtual reality.
Wait, Mark, this is so cool. Wait, just stop for a second, because every gesture you make, I can see all your hands, your expressions.
Well,
oh my God.
Yeah, no, this is...
Only boomers use Facebook now, and only boomers think those controllers are cool, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, here's what's even funnier on that point. This is not even new. I mean, this stuff's been around for a while, right? This exact technology with VR.
Yeah.
And so she's like, this is so neat and cool. How'd she even know that was correlating with what he was doing? She's got the goggles on. It's all PR. That's the whole thing. Look at that.
Well, obviously. Yeah. Right. Yeah. We don't have to watch anymore. Actually, if you don't want, we can go to the Washington Post version of it. Cause it's part of the sales pitch, which, you know, here you can see just how like, dumb it is. You know, anyway, yeah, go ahead. And this is from the Washington Post.
Okay.
The idea is like you go in wherever you are, you can have your perfect setup. You can have all your different monitors. You know, people can stop in and collaborate quickly, but it's really great for kind of focused work. And that will get better over time. The second area is around collaboration, which is really what this is focused on, which is, you know, the notion that like, we shouldn't really have to physically be together to feel present or collaborate or brainstorm. You know, I think video conferencing has taken us pretty far, but I don't know. I mean, I can just tell you that as we start, you know, planning to go back into the office, you know, I'm not super excited about just continuing to have just this, you know, have most meetings be over video. And what we're trying to move towards is a world where a lot of what we do is in here, and the people who can't be in here can be on video. So people can feel present that way if people aren't together in person physically. So we're focused on this. We think it's going to be a big use case for VR.
That was so clumsy. He can barely justify it. And also his first sales pitch, you can have all your monitors set up. I think he realized halfway through that if you're wearing the stupid Oculus headset, you can't see your stupid monitors,
dummy. Right. I mean, how about that you have a far, far, far more personal connection when you can literally look in somebody's eyes, video or not, right? You have a far, far, far better connection when you're literally in front of somebody, even on video. But now you're talking about these weirdly clunky images where... And that's supposed to feel more personal and present? I mean, nobody would agree with that. It's just
he also talked about going back to the office and then let's do this instead of meeting face to face.
So you're right around the corner and we're going to get on our Zoom call. Like this, they're trying to wrap this into the world we already have. Remember, that's again the point that that was always the case. We're not going back to what wasn't normal before. We're in this new bad, not normal.
Yeah. I think this is why they're so desperate for what they said in that article I showed about depending on like hundreds of thousands of creators freelance they want to hire. Because obviously Facebook's team, if they started on this before COVID and this is all they can do. Remember, they acquired Oculus Rift in 2014. So this probably goes back to then. That's like 7 years or so of work. And that's as good as those are the best graphics they can make in their metaverse. They obviously know it's not good enough to show in their keynote address because in the keynotes, they obviously bump the graphics up a lot, but they're using video editing Hollywood quality stuff to make it look like something like the movies or whatever, but that's not actually where Facebook's metaverse is. It's where it's at is what we just watched, essentially. Right. If you want, we can bring up that the keynote now in the interest of time to sort of show the difference there. And obviously since then, this came out, this week, right? So this is about 2 months after the videos we just watched where Zuckerberg was, clumsy to say, to be nice, I guess, in his sales pitch for this stuff. So this is his big, much more polished presentation. And there's obviously been some tweaking, of the language and the advantages of it. And one of those, I think, as I mentioned earlier, they're using different graphics to make it more enticing, but it's not the graphics they have. And then there's a lot of this collectivist type talk. We're in this together, that they're using to sort of drive this whole agenda forward, not just the metaverse.
Right. You ready to play it?
Yeah, sure.
Hey, and welcome to Connect. Today, we're going to talk about the metaverse. I want to share what we imagine is possible, the experiences you'll have, the creative economy we'll all build, and the technology.
Creative economy.
As well as how we're going to all do this together. The basic story of technology in our lifetimes is how it's given us the power to express ourselves and experience the world with ever greater richness. Back when I started Facebook, that mostly meant text that we typed on computers. Then we all got phones with cameras, and the internet became much more visual. And recently, as connections got faster, video has become the main way that we experience content. We've gone from desktop to web to phones, from text to photos to video, but this isn't the end of the line. The next platform and medium will be even more immersive, an embodied internet where you're in the experience, not just looking at it. And we call this the metaverse.
An embodied internet, that's interesting, like the internet of bodies, right? That's an interesting kind of cross right there.
Yes, there's that. And also ID 2020, I think back in either 2017 or 2016, talked about the humanized internet. Yeah, as a basis part of their project and the core of the humanized internet per those people talking at that ID 2020 presentation, freedom as a service. This comes from Corey Morningstar's research, is the first person who found that I've seen. Freedom as a service. It's not a right. It's a service you're paying for. The freedom of movement, the freedom to do this and that and participate in society is a service now.
Mm-hmm. Right. And we've seen that a lot through this process where they've taken things that were inalienable, shall not be infringed. Now they're like, well, we'll dole them back out as we see fit. And a lot of people just went along.
But only if you do this, that, and this first.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Very sad.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to be able to do almost anything you can imagine. Get together with friends and family, work, learn, play, shop, create, as well as entirely new categories that don't really fit how we think about computers or phones today.
That's weird.
Now, since we're doing this remotely today, I figured let's make this special. So we've put together something that I think is really going to give you a feeling for what this future could be like. We believe the metaverse will be the successor to the mobile internet. We'll be able to feel present, like we're right there with people, no matter how far apart we actually are. We'll be able to express ourselves in new, joyful, completely immersive ways. And that's going to unlock a lot of amazing new experiences.
Joyful.
Pause.
No. I just think it's so funny the way he's saying it. New, joyful ways of expressing yourself. I mean, the sales pitch is really dumb, I think.
For sure. That sounds good to me.
Parents, a video of my kids, they're going to feel like they're right in the moment with us, not peering through a little window. When you play a game with your friends, you'll feel like you're right there together in a different world, not just on your computer by yourself. And when you're in a meeting in the metaverse, it'll feel like you're right in the room together, making eye contact, having a shared sense of space, and not just looking at a grid of faces on a screen. That's what we mean by an embodied internet. Instead of looking at a screen, you're going to be in these experiences. Everything we do online today, connecting socially, entertainment, games, work, is going to be more natural and vivid. This isn't about spending more time on screens. It's about making the time that we already spend better. Humans just can't convey the full range of human expression.
Are you serious?
They can't deliver
a
deep feeling of presence.
And those Sims can? I mean, eye contact? This is ridiculous. Like, what does he think he's talking about? Like, it's not even remotely more personable than just than the video, right? I mean, that's crazy.
This is a sales pitch, yes. That's what he's claiming. Because, as we pointed out earlier, they're creating a world where you're never be allowed to be physically together. This will be the only way you can interact. And so they're making a substitute for real human interaction beyond the Zoom meetings.
You know what's interesting is that there was conversation from founders, founding members of this, Facebook, as I'm sure you've seen, talking about how this is like rewiring our brains, right? Mm-hmm. This is like the next step of that. I mean, they're ultimately just going to rewire you to think that that is human contact and have your endorphins pump when that happens versus not. You know, that's what this feels like. It's like and social engineering, brainwashing.
And that's why they want to start with the young kids.
Exactly.
So that they develop their knowledge and interactions, you know, from the very beginning are based on this stuff. After this, I want to show an article from the World Economic Forum about Facebook's metaverse. And the picture is literally like a 3-year-old with these goggles on.
God, that's so upsetting. God, there's so many reasons why that bothers me.
But the next version of the internet can. That's what we should be working towards. Technology that's built around people and how we actually experience the world and interact with each other. That's what the metaverse is all about. Now, the best way to understand the metaverse is to experience it yourself, but it's a little tough because it doesn't fully exist yet. Some of the basic building blocks are here, though, and others are starting to emerge as we speak. We're starting to get a sense of how it could all come together and what it could feel like. So today we're going to do something a little bit different. Rather than just focusing on this year's products like a normal keynote, we're going to talk about the future. So let's start by exploring what different kinds of metaverse experiences could feel like. Starting with the most important experience of all, connecting with people.
Ooh.
Imagine you put on your glasses or headset and you're instantly in your home space.
Home space, not your home, your home space.
And you're right. Look at how much better those graphics are. That's just not what it really looks like.
Not what it is at all. This is the sales pitch. And look on the wall. If you look on the wall, it's his like NFT gladiator clothes or whatever. His little like NFT trophies and non-fungible token, whatever. You know, I mean, that's what this is. It's so obvious.
Parts of your physical home recreated virtually. It has things that are only possible virtually. And it has an incredibly inspiring view of whatever you find most beautiful.
Hey, are you coming?
Yeah, just got to find something to wear. All right, perfect.
The music.
Oh, hey, Mark.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, Mark.
What's up, Mark? Whoa, we're floating in space?
Uh-huh.
Who made this place? It's awesome.
Right? It's from the crater. I met in L.A.
This place is amazing.
Boz, is that you?
Of course it's me. You know I had to be the robot, man.
I thought I was supposed to be the robot.
Whoa.
I knew you were bluffing.
Hey, wait. Where is Naomi?
Let's call her.
Naomi!
Yeah, we can pause here if you want. This, obviously, as you can see, if you want to watch the whole sales pitch for people that are watching, this is like an hour and 20 minutes. This is just the first blip, right? But it's just pretty insane, you know. People, you know, you can be a robot in the virtual reality, but you know, whatever, you can look however you want. You don't have to be a human. I identify as a cat, and I can be a cat, and the, you know, whatever.
There you go. Right, that point from before, right? They've normalized that idea from a lot of different angles.
Well, some of like the really extreme stuff with like the transgender thing, you know, there was like this one group that was saying you can identify as like a unicorn, you know, have your pronoun have like unicorn in it or witch in it or like all these fantasy figures. In that sense, you know, I think it may have something to do with, yeah, that you can develop this virtual, like not based in the real world identity, and you can actually live that within the metaverse or something like that. But compare what we just saw to what we saw earlier with what it actually is. Right. Like those are supposed to be the cool meeting rooms you can enjoy in Facebook's Horizon workrooms. In fact, no, you don't even have legs in Horizon workrooms.
Right, exactly.
And you can't even be anything other than a person, right? And you don't have that ability to move around and float like you're in space or whatever. This is all stuff that they're imagining and selling to you about how cool the metaverse is going to be. But none of that is actually a product or anything that Facebook is currently offering. It's just a sales pitch. And obviously, you know, what they're going to do is like the cool rooms, the cool spaces. Well, those will be premium and you'll have to pay a little bit more to get in the good ones. And the basic one is going to be just like some drab shit. Unless you dump all your money on, you know, NFTs to make it cool, or you pay for a premium home space or workspace or whatever.
That's interesting to think about the centralization of that wealth in general when that begins, because you're pumping money into something with not actually getting something for it in the real world. That's just an exponential or, you know, increasing the speed at which that happens, you know, the 2030 timeframe they're pushing toward.
Yeah, so I think we should take a look really quick at the at what the World Economic Forum is saying about the metaverse and Facebook recently. So this is from, when is this? Today, as I mentioned earlier, this is the picture they use to sell the metaverse. I mean, that kid has to be like three or four tops.
That's crazy.
They're enjoying the metaverse, right? Anyway, talking about the Facebook name change is why this was written. I'm just going to scroll down in the interest of time. Mm-hmm. Linking digital assets to real world economic activity in the metaverse, a major focus of the WEF's interest in this. The metaverse is also expected to have a strong connection with the real world economy. So it's not a real world, but it has a strong connection with only one thing in the real world, and that's the economy. And to eventually become an extension of it.
Exactly. Right.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I was going to say, there is this movie that came out a few years ago called like Sleep Dealer. I don't know if you're familiar. It's about like how this exact type of metaverse stuff is used to exploit cheap labor in the third world, essentially. Basically, and I think I saw an article saying this essentially recently that, you know, you can have your lawn be mowed by a robot, but the robot is controlled by a person in Mexico or El Salvador or whatever. And you only have to pay them, you know, the much cheaper wages that are paid in. Right. In those countries relative to the U.S., but they plug into the metaverse and do that work for you. This is not the kind of like utopian shit they're trying to sell. This is a way to expand existing exploitative markets and create new exploitative markets. That's what this is about. And that's also what the sustainable development goals are about. These natural asset corporations are about. These are creating new markets and new asset classes that they can use to profit off of everything. And the predatory corporate behavior that a lot of people blame for our current situation. I mean, this is just the ultimate feeding frenzy for them, financializing all life and then creating virtual worlds that don't even exist that they can charge us for, tax us for, and profit off of our existence within them. I mean, it's insane. It's the extreme logical conclusion of the path we've been on for a long time.
Totally agree. And very well put. I mean, that's a really important point that they're selling this whole concept, not just this one part of it, but the whole future under a guise that it's going to do away with these problems, whether they're environmental, hate speech and whatever else and negative. But obviously that's not the case. They're just creating another version of this, whatever you want to call it. Reality is not the right word, where those same problems will exist because you know what? We're all human and we still have those problems. They don't just disappear until they start addressing that problem next, which is where it seems
right
to go.
Right.
Scary.
And so here they talk about NFTs. Oh man, I should have seen this coming a little bit before I did, but at least I saw it before the World Economic Forum told me what to think about it. And man, if you are in the NFT space or promoting this and now you're seeing the WEF saying this stuff, no.
Wake up.
Don't support this.
Yeah.
Anyway, saying, you know, all of this strong connection to the real world economy of the metaverse may rely on non-fungible tokens, NFTs, as the foundation for value creation. And it defines what NFTs are and says if NFTs become a commonly adopted tool for trading goods, they could accelerate the use of, I guess, XR being like, I guess, virtual mixed reality ecosystems as places people go to combine elements of the digital economy with their offline lives. But really, it's not offline lives because NFTs only exist in the online digital life.
That's why I'm kind of confused by that. What are they arguing? How can you use this stuff in your normal life? I guess maybe trade them, maybe like trading them when you're not immersed in the metaverse. It just, you're still at the same point. You're still at the same time trading. Did I just lose you, Whitney? It looks like I just lost you. You're still trading things that don't actually translate into the real world, right? So there's no actual, you're spending resources, money, it's coming right back. Good. In the metaverse that then get pulled in by the same people that are utilizing those resources outside the metaverse. And you don't get anything you can then use. I mean, how long until we have, I mean, doesn't this seem to also kind of lean into the idea of the supply chain, the infrastructure? I'm just simply saying that like how long until people are dumping resources into this when we're not having any real world things produced, unless I guess your point about making robots do things, will that just completely exacerbate the problems we're already having? Supply chain, infrastructure, you know, resources. Interesting thought, but I think they have a plan for that already.
Yeah, well, as I mentioned earlier, I think the whole supply chain shortages that we're seeing right now, you know, that's going to be a big sales pitch for the metaverse. Like, oh, well, there isn't a shortage of these goods and fun toys and entertainment, whatever, in the metaverse. So go spend all your time in there since you can't obtain those objects or do those activities in the real world anymore. It's going to be something like that. But it is worth pointing out that, you know, there has been a degree of fakeness that's existed in the real world for a considerable amount of time. And people have built sort of fake identities in a sense in the real world. And to an extent that was enabled even more by social media. So this is sort of the next evolution of that, I guess, in a sense, but also just a very extreme one, obviously, but definitely not anything that it's certainly not the world, primary world I want for myself or my children, you know, and the fact that there's a lot of this going on in the education system, specifically John Klezek, who contributes to my site Unlimited Hangout, has done a lot of work on this. He'll have a new piece out in the next couple of days on this, just about how extremely invested teachers unions, the main teachers unions in the United States are in bringing that future, including for young children. And then I would encourage people to go and see some of the art. My browser crashed a second ago, so I don't have the tabs anymore, unfortunately. But some of the articles that I already referenced, that I've written in the past year, specifically the one on Welcome Leap, and also the one on Facebook's military origins, because this, we have to understand that Facebook is not just a private company that was really born out of Mark Zuckerberg's dorm room, okay? This is something that goes like much farther than that, and as I mentioned earlier, and a lot of my work in past interviews have touched on this, the ties of Silicon Valley and big tech to the national security state. Those are ultimately the forces that drive and enable these companies to do what they do. And they are the ones benefiting from this. What better way to control people if it's all virtual and you have access to their thoughts and that extreme degree of surveillance that all these wearables will allow, as we've talked about on your show numerous times. I mean, it's just anyone that's going to believe these sales pitches is deluding themselves. But obviously, I think what we need to anticipate now is pushing these narratives into overdrive with what they're building up towards now, which appears to be this whole climate change pivot away from COVID, which I've mentioned several times was announced by Klaus Schwab in January of this year. Before the Davos annual meeting, there was an agenda week. And in that video, he said by the end of the year, the main focus will be climate change. Then you have Bill Gates sort of rebrand from COVID to climate change. And that you have a COP26 taking place in the UK right now. And, you know, obviously the main pivot is going to be there as well. As I mentioned about how this is so focused on economy and creating a new economy, stakeholder capitalism, inclusive capitalism, all of that stuff. You also have behind this group green agenda, central bankers and Wall Street bankers really driving this to a significant degree through things like ESG investing, natural asset corporations, and also, you know, the people, the guy at the UN in charge of green finance is Mark Carney, World Economic Forum board member, and also former head of the Bank of England and the Bank of Canada, the central banker par excellence, right? These are the people that are driving this, and it's because it's all about profit, and it's not profiting off of you, it's profiting off of life itself, essentially, right, with the financialization of nature, which I've written about recently, and Corey Morningstar has done amazing work on, but also financializing what they call human capital and social capital. And obviously the human and social capital side of that, that's going to be taking place in the metaverse, milking profit off of humanity and our social interactions. And they're doing this through control over public policy, because we really need to understand. And if people go and listen to my most recent podcast with Ian Davis, he really fleshes this out in a great way. Governments are not creating policy anymore. They're just enforcing it. Mm-hmm. That policy is being made by other groups that include the World Economic Forum. Obviously, there's other groups in that category making these policies. They're being forced on governments or being pushed upon governments or given to governments by groups like the IMF, groups like the Gates Foundation, and some of these philanthropist billionaires who use money of the current economic system as a way to force these people, these governments, to adopt these policies. But we have to look more at the policies they're making and where they're taking this. And the fact that the World Economic Forum is like, the internet will become the metaverse, as Mark Zuckerberg says, and this is where it's going. We need to start paying attention, because how long until that trickles down to the government level? And you can get bonuses or UBI or whatever if you spend X amount of hours in the metaverse, right, and stuff like that.
Right. And that translates to social credit and everything we're talking about. Just the last thing I'd like to add, and I'm going to have to run. I have an interview shortly. But the part we didn't really get into today, which you and I have discussed before, is something that really concerns me about maybe the primary point of what this is, or maybe just a beneficial side part that they, you know, beneficial to them, that during this process with the mind reading technology and everything else, they're capable of continuing to try to map how your brain works, leading towards the singularity, which you've discussed they have been failing to achieve. And maybe that's what all of this has ultimately been about, being able to map how you work and just you doing it willingly. And there's a far more nefarious things around all this like that, that I, you know, just pay attention to Whitney's work. She's been on top of this from the beginning. This is an alarming future that they're trying to push you into. So don't let them.
Well, thanks for that, Ryan. And also thanks for being here. Appreciate your time. So really hope people will consider sharing this video around so we can break through some of the propaganda being put out around the Facebook metaverse and how cool it will be and all of this stuff. This is fundamentally a project of the national security state and the banking system to control people, extract infinite profit, not just from the existing world, but from infinite digital worlds. Hooray. So that is not the future we should be signing up for. And the best way to prevent us from, you know, tacitly going along with this or unintentionally promoting this and all of that stuff is to realize what the propaganda, separating the propaganda from the fact when it comes to these topics. So, Facebook's rebrand is about a lot of things, and we've touched on most of them today, but of course, there's always more to discuss. So thanks so much for watching and see you in the next video.